Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
Nick pointed this out to me. Was it 40 years ago this week? That
40 years ago tomorrow.
That the movie Airplane came out?
No way.
They were showing both Airplane and Airplane 2 last weekend on the Epics or something like that.
Okay. You know what? In the accolades of films, what I didn't know is how high it had ranked in the funny category. So, like, Bravo, they had the 100 movies of all time, and it ranked number 6 on that list.
In just movies or comedy movies?
In 100 funniest movies.
Okay, wow.
In 2007, survey by Channel 4 in the United Kingdom, it came in as the second greatest comedy film of all time after Monty Python's Life of Brian. In 2008, it was selected by Empire Magazine as one of the 500 greatest movies of all time. And in 2012, was voted number one in the 50 funniest comedies ever poll.
No wow. Way.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
There's so many classic lines that come from that
well,
movie.
Well, let me ask you a question, Steve, because, you know, you're a student of comedy and the history of comedy. Was this type of movie, was this a sea change in how comedies were presented as a movie? Because
well, these guys were actually, they had done, most of them had done a couple of movies, one of them specifically Kentucky Fried Movie.
Okay. Yeah, these are the Zucker Brothers.
The Zucker Brothers. And so they were starting that. And John Landis and the whole collective was starting the National Lampoon sort of vibe of comedy and parody. And what they basically did is they took a pre-existing movie and they sort of, you know, went sort of scene by scene. And if you were to watch it, you'd see very, very, very many similarities. There's bad food on the plane.
Right.
And this causes an issue.
It's an airport movies, right?
It was a different one.
Okay. There was a movie called Zero Hour.
Yeah.
Okay. In 1957 that it follows most of the plot and central characters. But then there are elements of Airport 1975 and some of the other airport movies.
Right. So, but it was a low budget. But the brilliant thing they did is they took traditional stoic leading men like Peter Graves, like Leslie Nielsen. Chuck Connors appears in the second one. So Lloyd Bridges.
Two things to back up what you just said. Yeah, it was a $3.5 million budget. It made $158 million worldwide, which were staggering numbers at the time.
Yeah.
And then, Steve, they said that one of the Zuckers said that the absolute trick was to cast actors like Robert Stack, Leslie Nielsen, Peter Graves, and Lloyd Bridges. He said, quote, "These were people who up to that time had never done comedy. We thought they were much funnier than the comedians of that time were." David Zucker felt that Stack was the most important actor to be cast since he was the linchpin of the film's plot. He said Stack initially played his role in a way that was different from what the directors had in mind. They showed him a tape of impressionist John Biner impersonating Robert Stack. Remember John Biner?
Yes, I love John Biner. He's a great impressionist.
And according to the producers, Stack was doing an impression of John Biner doing an impression of Stack.
Wow. Stack has one of the funniest lines in the movie, and I forget what the impetus of it is for, but it's one of those things that only he and a guy, an actor like him, could deliver, where they're basically saying, turn the runway lights on. And then he looks off to the side and he goes, "No. That's exactly what they'd be expecting."
Yes, exactly. So Stack, hey, let me finish with just a little bit more here, Kay says. Stack was not initially interested in the part, but they had persuaded him. Now, Lloyd Bridges' kids told him to take the part.
And
that's Jeff Bridges and Bo Bridges. They said, "Dad, you got to do this."
And he started doing a number of them. He went on, he's in Hot Shots.
Yes.
Part two.
Yeah.
Actually, I think he's in both of them. Because in the first, he's a general, and then the next one, he's a president.
As far as Peter Graves, he rejected the script at first. He considered it tasteless, and he's the one that said, "You ever seen a grown man naked? That's him."
Okay. You ever been to a Turkish bath?
And the role of Ted Stryker, the main role, which went to Robert Hayes, was originally written for David Letterman, auditioned the role of the news anchor in the Kentucky Fried movie, which Steve mentioned. Letterman screen tested for Airplane, but ultimately he wasn't selected. So they went to relatively unknown Robert Hayes, who at the time was on a show called Angie. And he was also on, that was the show at the time. And then they got Julie Haggerty, and she rounded out the cast. And they advised her to play it straight in the movie.
Pretty much, so. Everyone is playing that, to, you know, except for a few. Oh, there's the, I forget the gentleman's name, he passed away, but he was the really crazy, flamboyant.
Yes, I wrote.
He's one of the Zucker Brothers' favorites.
Yeah, I love that, I wrote because Leon's down. Getting larger is something that was used against me.
Yeah, his name is Stephen Stucker. He was air traffic controller Johnny Henshaw Jacobs.
I just love the idea that there are so many different approaches to comedy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's not just one way. You take a look at, like, Jim Carrey, and he's the person that makes the lines funny, right? The lines are funny on, you know, so you take the situation and the lines and the formula, to me, I think, is just...
Well, it happens all the time when people say, you know, with comedy, you know... explain what makes something funny, or how I approach comedy, and ultimately it comes down to this: if it makes someone laugh, that's it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, all right. So, Steve, it's Andre Brower's birthday, right?
Right.
So, yeah. Who would have known Andre Brower? He's not. I mean, you're classically, you're like, oh, dude, that guy's so funny. But you put him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you make him this character, and all of this stuff around him, and then his approach to that TV show. He's one of the funniest characters on the show.
And he
plays it straight.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, I referenced the comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks earlier this morning. And Jerry asks Mel about writing the producers and if he was nervous while doing that.
Yeah.
And Mel's answer is so typically of him, but he's like, that stuff made us laugh. Blazing Saddles made us laugh. And we knew that if we were going to make each other laugh, and if Richard Pryor comes on board and he thinks that it's funny, because they were writing a lot of stuff with racially dividing, you know, and stuff the N-word and whatever. But
could not get away with exactly. Now, but it was done. And that stuff was mostly written by people like Richard Pryor.
Exactly.
It has to. You have to have a certain point where you say, what group of people? That's why a lot of comedians will write things. A lot of comedic writers will write things, and they have their go-to person. Like, I forget who uses, somebody uses Sacha Baron Cohen as their sounding board, because you got to, how does this sound? How does this work for you?
Right.
But at a certain point, you just have to go on instinct. I mean, what we're seeing is the clips on the screen here in the studio, and it still makes you laugh even without the sound.
We're talking about Airplane if you're just tuning in.
Yeah, and so some comedy is timeless, right? And then other comedy is, you know, maybe ahead of its time. Nick, we watched that one documentary on, it was the Dana Carvey show, right?
Oh, yeah,
that's great. You take a look at all of the people that were involved with the Dana Carvey show, and it failed because people weren't ready for it.
Funny to Fail is the name of the documentary.
I think that's what it was.
And Colbert and Steve Carell were in it. Airplane is timeless. The Naked Gun stuff, to me, is pretty timeless. But when you go back, at least for me, when I go back and watch something like Ace Ventura, I don't really find that funny anymore. Billy Madison is a terrible movie.
I tried to watch it the other day.
It's funny.
It's not available. I didn't feel like paying for it, but it's not on any streaming platforms. But I wanted to see how bad it really is, because in 1993, 94, or whatever it was.
It's
what
very
year
bad.
Was that, Nick? What year did it come out?
94. Okay. And watching it in college.
So I didn't watch it until recently, and I watched part of it because Mercer's like, you guys see it? I'm like, this is the stupidest stuff I've ever seen, man. But if I grew up with it, and it was just the silly comedy, because the other day, Austin Powers 3 Gold Member was on, and I'm like, wow. Wow, were they just rehashing the same jokes?
And that's what
over
happened with
and over.
The Naked Gun. I mean, the Naked Gun, the first, second one, and then you go to the well too much, and things become far too telegraphed.
Yes,
you know, and a lot of comedy is about repetition. It's something that I, for years, I said I'm not going to do that again because I just did it or I did something like that. And now I'm like with this show all the time. There are certain characters and scenarios that people seem to enjoy, so I'll do them over and over again. But you have to know, you know. I mean, there's so much sharp writing on these things. A movie that the Zucker Brothers did that I adore, I know you do as well, Top Secret.
Oh, I love it.
It's just a great one. It's a one-off. And there you have Val Kilmer, who turned out to be hilarious.
And that wouldn't have existed without Airplane, because it follows right into that complete slapstick.
It sort of bombed, too.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. There's a scene in that movie I love. It's just, they do things just for no reason in that movie. He's sitting in a train, and they're about to pull away from the depot, and they're pulling away, and you realize the train isn't moving, the depot pulled away. And you're like, what was the point of that? Was none.
And
it's just bizarre, just to make you go, what the hell did I just see?
Forced perspective shots where the phone's ringing, and you just think it's a shot of the phone in the foreground, and the Nazis across the room. It's a tremendous phone.
Yeah,
that he picked. Yeah, yeah.
I love that stuff. Airplane was, and it came out of nowhere. It was one of those movies that my parents took me to see. I didn't know what, you know, it was a movie night. We were just going to see a movie. I didn't know what we were going to see. Yeah. We walked in, and Steve, I don't know if you remember this or not, but when I saw it in the theater experience, they actually showed a Warner Brothers cartoon short before it. I'm like, this is great.
Right,
they don't do this anymore.
Old style.
And they showed an old Bugs Bunny cartoon or something like that, and then the movie came on, and it was go from the beginning. It was just all rules were broken.
You were old enough to, I think, appreciate it, too. You were 12 years old at the time, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember also that one of the ongoing jokes that a lot of people didn't realize, I pointed out to my wife, is that every external shot of the jet plane, you hear prop engines.
Yes. It's a jet. Yeah. And they had props. Oh, it's great. It's great.
Well, Spaceballs also came out around this time, what, 27 years ago?
Okay.
It's, you know, kind of like the same approach to comedy, right?
I'm going to buck the trend a little bit here because I love so much of Mel Brooks. Spaceballs is not a very good it's okay. It's funny. The moments that are funny are really funny, but it's not as consistent. Compare that to Young Frankenstein or Blazing Saddles. Or,
I love History of the World Part 1.
History of the World Part 1. And but like Men in Tights is not good.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not. No, you're right. I went back and I'm like, it's Mel Brooks. So, you know, and I'd seen it years and years ago and I pulled it up and I started watching. I'm like, okay, this one's not so
good. You know what is also not good? That good? There's maybe a couple laughs, but Dead and Loving It, the vampire one that he did with Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't. I'd seen enough Leslie Nielsen in spoofs, you know, and I didn't want to. I didn't even give it a time.
He became the go-to so much so that what made it funny initially.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many solid, you know, you pull up a chair and have a memory. You know, stuff like he would say that it was just great classic hokey lines. But after a while, it's like, come on.
Right.
I just got the joke about Toy Story 4 with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. Mel plays Meliphant Brooks, and Carl plays Carl Rhinoceros.
Oh!
They play each other as those animals, and their names are...
I didn't pick up on that either. Well, okay, so Airplane, 40 years old. Now, that one I still think holds up. I mean, there's a lot of dated things in it. I still think one of the funniest lines ever in cinema happens, and I've told you guys before, it's when the young girl's sitting there and the young boy comes by with a coffee and they're acting very adult. Walking by, I had some, was wondering if you wouldn't mind a cup of coffee.
Oh, I have it here.
And when she hits it, you know, he goes, would you like sugar? And
the cream? No, thank you. I take it black. Like my man.
Oh, my God. And you're like, these are kids talking. And it was just like, I had never seen anything like that in my life.
Could you make that? You can't make that now, right? But you can laugh about it now, but you can't make that now.
And you can't, the whole, that's, you know, sad. You ever seen a grown man naked? I mean, none of that stuff. So
you know what, though? There are, somehow it works its way through. Some movies can get away with it. Some there needs to be that stuff that just makes you say that's so wrong.
Right? Yeah.
And that's all. Blazing Saddles, when we were watching it in the theater, I remember the first time. You know, the audience was howling. The fact that it was so wrong was what made it so hilarious and so right.
Yep. Mm. So
have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Turkish prison, that was it.
What else does he ask him? Or he's like, oh, you have a dog, Scraps. Oh, and Scraps is a boy dog, isn't it? Just all these.
I love when she's dragging him down the middle aisle. But, you know, they've passed out by the feet.
Yeah, there's no problem. if you look out to the right, you'll see Hoover Dam. You know, just complete. And oh, how about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Yes. Yeah, it's great.
Who would have seen that coming?
You try dragging Lambeer up and down the court.
Yeah.
Listen, my old man says.
I'm running up and down that court.
I am busting my buns every night.
When they get to Leslie Nielsen, when he gets introduced in the movie and he's sleeping and Julie Haggerty comes up to him, he's got the stethoscope around his neck.
Excuse me, sir, are you a doctor?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I am.
And there's, okay, here's another obscure thing. Mm-hmm. All right, so when Leslie Nielsen is attending the sick one.
Right.
And he has her to open her mouth. She opens her mouth and there's an egg in her mouth. And he's doing a sleight of hand. He keeps pulling egg after egg after egg out. And then he cracks one of them and a bird flies out of it.
I love that.
No reason at all. And going back to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, there's another part where the plane is, it's like it's descending very quickly, and he's apparently eating the food, and he's sick.
Right.
And they pull him out, and he's wearing basketball shorts, and the eye
goggles. The goggles are then on.
For no reason. Yeah. It's just one thing after another that's great about that movie that you just didn't expect. But it did. Yeah, Steve, like you said, the budget was $3.5 million. They made $158 million worldwide. On that, but it was 40 years ago. God, I clearly remember going to see that movie.
Number two is pretty good. It's not great.
They're in space, right?
Yeah. Yes. William Shatner is very funny in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it 40 years. For a lot of movies.
So it's not a comedy, but right now there's a movie on Amazon Prime called 7500 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I watched it last weekend. And listen, man, it's a good movie. The entire movie basically takes place in the cockpit. It's crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Really, really good stuff.
You recommend it?
I do.
Okay. Let me see. There's another thing, but it's not coming up till September. It's completely different. Steve sent me this article, but it is called Inside the Manson Cult, The Lost Tapes. And it's a two-hour documentary. It will be narrated by Liev Schreiber, who is a great VO guy, voiceover guy.
Is Tom McElwain in this?
Oh, I forgot his connection to the Manson family.
This is a dude camping.
He apparently was basically Manson's second in command. There was Tex Watson and and they were like, Tom. They shared the duties.
When Manson needed insurance advice, he turned to Tom.
Right.
Yeah.
So it tells the usual Manson narrative, but what's different about it is the color it provides, both literally and figuratively, through never-before-seen sun-drenched film footage of the family on Spahn Ranch, as well as new interviews with those involved. The video and audio recordings remind us it was real, he was real, and so were his brainwashing tactics and followers. Mm-hmm. So here's how this worked out. Throughout his 30-year career, a guy named Simon Andre, the special's executive producer, has made documentaries on serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer and Armin Mews, dubbed the Rotenberg Cannibal.
Right.
But he's always wanted to make a film on Manson. But he had heard about a young film director named Robert Hendrickson, who had taken hundreds of hours of footage of the family between December 1969 and March 1973, some of which Hendrickson used to make a documentary he did in 1973 called Manson. But Andre knew that there had to be more of this film around and that didn't make the cut in 73. So he just didn't know where to find it. So he hired a private investigator who tracked down the house where Hendrickson had lived and made contact with his widow and son who were still residing there. And once he had access to the tapes, he went through more than 100 hours of footage and ended up concentrating on three aspects of the narrative for the documentary. So number one was telling the story of the Manson family from the inside. Two, showing how Manson was able to brainwash his followers, and then bringing it to light revelations on the crimes.
It's pretty wild. And a lot of it does focus in on the Spahn Movie Ranch, which obviously was a chunk of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where Brad Pitt goes to visit the family there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the classic lines like, "Don't call me Shirley."
Yeah, of course.
Don't call me Shirley.
I am Shirley.
It's funny, right?
This is a comedy?
You're saying S-U-R-E-L-Y, and I'm hearing it like S-H-I-R-L-E-Y.
Oh, my God.
Did he come up with the pick the wrong week to stop sniffing glue line?
I picked the wrong week to stop killing people.
That's a little too far.
Oh, yeah. We'll go with the glue line.
Hendrickson was granted unprecedented access to the family and Spahn Ranch shortly after Manson and several other family members.
This is our health club.
Were arrested in December 1969. At one point, Steve, he smuggled a camera into Manson's jail cell and recorded message from him to his followers where he asks them to break him out from behind bars, providing an inside look into how he brainwashed and manipulated them.
They've studied. He was actually a big, go figure, a big fan of the book Mein Kampf. So he employed a lot of those tactics. And in that jail cell, they credit this with being the first cameo birthday video, Preston.
Oh,
so,
really?
Hi, Charles. This goes out to Billy. I understand it's your 11th birthday. Go get him, slugger.
Philly.
Wow.
Nice. Oh, I hope you get dead school to you. I did not kill your parents.
He would have done cameo.
Absolutely, man. It's easy work.
Wow.
Remember that lunatic who was, he said, well, Manson had a number of women who were courting him, but there was one who was just about to make it work, and then turns out she was just a fame seeker.
Oh really?
Broke my heart. Yeah.
Bitches, right?
Bitches, man. Because I can't make you love me if you won't.
He was a songwriter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wait, did we play any of his music, or did I hear it elsewhere?
Who? A couple Manson people recorded it. Re-recorded it.
Maybe I was watching. Guns N' Roses did, I think.
And I was, but I was watching a documentary.
No, you know what it was? Fireworks is mine.
Oh, it was. You did fireworks?
Yeah.
It was Mindhunter.
Baby, you're a firework. I didn't know. I'm sorry, Nick.
The TV show Mindhunter. There's an episode where they focus on Charlie, and and at the end of the episode, they play one of his songs, and it's not bad. And he was inspired by the California scene, and
that's not fictitious. In fact, as depicted in the movie in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Manson had gone to the Sharon Tate's and Roman Polanski's home.
He was friends with those people,
and he thought Brian Wilson still lived there, and he did not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but he was friends, I believe, with Dennis, or like friendly, and had spent time with Dennis Wilson.
They struck up a decent friendship, but then they really realized quickly, okay, let's break from this guy.
It really is. I mean, it's fascinating, the storyline with Manson, and you know, so much of it is horrific, but so much of it is just like really compelling stuff.
Right, you know that new sound you're looking for?
By the way, Nick mentioned that show Mindhunter. If serial killers are something that you're just fascinated with, and how people, human beings, can do that type of thing, it's the development of the
profilers,
the crimes, and the investigators, and how they started profiling, and the actual term of serial killer, the actual distinction of that type of killer. Created in the behavioral sciences unit with the FBI. Watch it. It's Mindhunter. There's two seasons. I think they're going to do a third. It's going to be a long time before they do that because of the coronavirus and also other commitments and things.
We were talking.
Hey, shoot up, everyone. Hanging 10. No, not surfing. That was hanging 10 people.
Right. Wow. Okay.
We were talking about Casey and Kathy were talking about shows to binge and that are great shows, but you can't watch too many of them in a row. Mindhunter's that for me. Like one or two of them, and they're so dark and they're awfully depressing, but it's really good TV.
Yep.
Like crazy people out there.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So do you want to hear this Manson song?
Well, why not?
Okay, here it
Fire.
Is. It's not where you're not free.
And this is him singing?
Yeah.
Okay.
You all miss where you can be what you are, because you were just born to be.
It's sex.
Now let me show you that castles and diamonds for all to see. But they'll never show you that peace of mind, because they don't know how to be free. So burn all your bridges. You're strong in your mind.
Very uplifting.
He can carry a tune. I mean, well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, he can actually. He's not great, but he's not terrible. As a performer, but and that was part of his charm to those people was his music and trying to spread that. You know, that free love message and all that stuff. But it took a little bit of a turn there at some point.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of a turn.
Helter Skelter.
Yep. All right. Well, listen, that's not coming out till September. That all this footage that's been unearthed of the Manson family, it'll be in September. It's going to be on Fox.
We're always, you know, we talked about it. We're drawn to this stuff. And that's one of the classic Hollywood, like the Black Dahlia murder. The woman who is cut in half, and the story that surrounds it has been part of lore and murder lore and crime lore forever.
The Zodiac Killer. I'm fascinated by that stuff. Just number one, who these crazy people are, and the trying to track down and the detective work being done on it. It's they're crazy, wild stories.
Get the whole Preston and Steve Show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.